If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome to The New Chemist. We're glad you're listening. Feel free to download this podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Here on The New Chemist, we discuss chemistry, which simply put is the science of change, as well as careers, community research, and COVID-19. We're happy you're tuning in. My guest today is the Dean of the College of Engineering at Georgia Tech, Dr. Raheem Bayer. Thanks for joining me today. It is good to hear from you. Just briefly, I'll inform my audience about you. Dr. Bayer is a Georgia Tech alumnus. He earned his master's and PhD in electrical and computer engineering from Georgia Tech in 1999 and 2003, respectively. He received his Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University in 1998. A native Atlantan, he is a graduate of the Atlanta Public Schools system. Dr. Bayer also leads the Communications Assurance and Performance Group and is affiliated with the Institute for Information Security and Privacy. He is a co-founder and board chair of Fortified Logic, Incorporated, an industrial cybersecurity company. He serves as Institute Data Security Lead. He's a co-founder and steering committee member of the Academic and Research Leadership Network. He's held several additional leadership roles at Tech, including serving as interim Steve W. Chadwick Electrical and Computer Engineering School Chair during the 2017 to 2018 academic year, the Electrical and Computer Engineering Associate Chair for Strategic Initiatives and Innovation from 2016 to 2018, and Chair of the Electrical and Computer Engineering Computer Systems and Software Technical Interest Group from 2015 to 2017. He received the National Science Foundation Career Award in 2009 and was selected for the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency Computer Science Study Panel in 2010. He's a member of the Association, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the American Society for Engineering Education, a lifetime member of the National Society of Black Engineers, a senior member of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, and an Association for Computing Machinery Distinguished Sciences. Prior to becoming a faculty member at Georgia Tech, Dr. Bayer was an assistant professor in the Department of Computer Science at Georgia State University. A research engineer with electrical and computer engineering at Tech and a consultant with Anderson Consulting, now Accenture. He has served as guest editor for a number of journals and magazines, including IEEE Network Magazine and IEEE Communications Magazine, and an associate editor of several journals in the field. Please welcome Dr. Thanks, Dr. Bayer, for joining me. It's good to have you on. You are a very accomplished engineer. You're now Dean of the College of Engineering at Georgia Tech, which is a very good engineering school. So my question to you is, what have been your longstanding interests in the field of science?
Yeah, well first, David, thank you for inviting me and taking the time to chat with me. That's a good question. I originally was drawn into the STEM field through video games and many years ago. So I was a young kid and my grandmother bought me an Atari 2600. And I tell folks that thing changed my life. I had lots of fun on that and I had all the systems after that. And I would always see various points in the game and let's say you see like a broken down vehicle and I would like, man, it'd be really cool if we can drive this tank or fly this helicopter. And that got me thinking, well, what if I could change the game? And which ultimately is obviously computer programming. Hmm. And so that kind of led me in the direction of computing. in high school, and ultimately decided to switch to electrical engineering. And by the time I finished my undergraduate degree, I was really fascinated by the whole concept of networking, computer networking. And so that has been what I've been focused on for the last couple of decades now.
Oh, wow.
As I finished my PhD, I really wanted to focus in on a specific area of networking, which was network security or cybersecurity.
Okay.
And so I ended up focusing on that. But you'll see that almost all my papers, even the standard cybersecurity papers, have this sort of networking flair to them.
Okay. So this is just a sidebar as we continue the conversation. Typically, I know for chemistry and biology, science and nature is like the pinnacle of journal publishing. Is that, what's the pinnacle like journal for publishing in cybersecurity? What would you say is the top journal?
Yeah, so there are actually four number one conferences in cybersecurity, and it's not journals, it's conferences. But they're, you know, 15 page, 16 page conferences, right? So it's like, you know, dual column, so just like a long journal. And that's ACM, CCS, NDSS is the second one. IEEE Security and Privacy, known as Oakland, and then USENIX Security. So those four are the number, they're essentially tied for number one in cybersecurity. And ideally you want to get something in those conferences as a graduate student and a faculty member.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. So that's good information. So, you know, given all of the issues that COVID-19 has brought a lot of people and also the challenges in academia, how do you maintain view of the bigger picture in your career and in your life in general?
Yeah, you know, that's important to do. I've always been very interested in making a significant societal impact.
Okay.
And the way I look at the various roles that I've been in, they've been sort of the mechanism for me to do that. And the more I build my voice, as I, you know, went from a interim chair to a research vice president to now dean of engineering, the more I build my voice, the more likely it is I can have a societal impact. And specifically, I'm very interested in expanding access. I want to make sure that the folks that come behind me and come behind you, if they're absolutely qualified, we got to make sure that they can get in the door at Georgia Tech and many other places. So. That has kind of been innate for me. I've just seen the difference between those with resources and those that don't have them. And I know folks that are, you know, really, really bright and didn't have resources and just never had any good opportunities. And that bothers me. So that's always been sort of my true north, something that I've been focused on. And I'm actually, it's a lot easier for me to deal with and view the big picture. It's the sort of blocking and tackling things that like operational type things are not things that I really enjoy doing. So it's usually easy for me in terms of big picture. It's focusing on the true north and what's really important. And for me, that's family and physical and mental health and all those things first. And then it's, okay, well, I have a job that I got to make sure I do this job well.
Okay, so what you said raises a lot of questions in terms of, you said you see the big picture. So what's your take on how do you pragmatically break it down? What's your first step? You don't have to go through the whole process, but how do you go from, okay, I want to expand access to what do I need to do today? Or what do I need to do this year?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So what I mentioned also was that I needed to build my voice, right? So it's like the more significant of a voice you have, the more change that you can ultimately affect. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is actually being successful in my career, right? So if we ignore actually sort of mechanically trying to expand access and just look at building the voice, that essentially has been exceptional in my current career and continue to progress, right? Yeah. So that's one thing. So such that I can get to a point where I can, you know, have a conversation, I can call somebody that's, you know, extremely senior, you know, like a Gary May, for example, or many other college presidents who are mentors and friends and say, hey, I got this idea on about expanding access. So the first part is really building the voice. So being exceptional at your current roles and progressing. But then there are other things that you can do that are kind of practical, right? So at Georgia Tech, we just, and this is done by our president, we just announced an APS pathway, so Atlanta Public School pathway. And what that means is if you apply to Georgia Tech and you don't get accepted in the first round, and by the way, we don't accept many amazing students because we just don't have room. So it doesn't mean that they're not quality. It just means that we just don't have room. But what that means is if you went to APS and went through APS and applied, didn't get accepted, you have up to 2 years. If you meet certain requirements, then you can essentially have an automatic acceptance coming back in as a transfer student a year or two later. So being involved in those programs, trying to amplify those programs, I'm actually an APS grad. So trying to be central in those programs is one way to do it. Another way to do it is looking at, we have these online programs. So we have an online master's in computer science, online master's in analytics, and online master's in cybersecurity. And I was the executive director that actually stood up the online master's in cybersecurity program. And that screams access because now there's no physical boundary. You can be all over the world. We literally have students all over the world. And also, it's from a cost perspective, it's not unreasonable. And so it's $10,000 tuition for the whole master's degree, right? Not per class, not per semester, but per degree. And the third piece about that is expanding access is that you don't have to have a computer science or engineering undergraduate degree to get accepted into the master's program, right? So you can do these interesting programs that are much more accessible to people.
Okay, wow, that's good. Yeah, man, we leave our footsteps behind. And also, you said a lot of important things, building your voice. So how have you been adaptive and creative in the field of science?
Yeah, so it's funny. That's almost kind of natural for, as you'll appreciate as you get out, and your advisor now also sort of like PhD level research as you will kind of naturally adapt in order to survive, right? Because what happens is problems shift, right? Mm-hmm. If we're making progress with all sorts of things. And so for example, there's a whole in the business / sociology type space, actually probably more like an HR type space. There's now this really important area called future work, which, people never really, they weren't focused on it pre-COVID, but now post-COVID in the middle of COVID, hopefully in a few months or a little bit longer will be post-COVID.
Yeah, I hope I'm great.
But now this is a big deal because people have found out, well, guess what? I don't have to be physically co-located with folks to work together, right? So even at Georgia Tech, we're conducting research, instruction, and our staff support. None of these things are co-located with each other, right? So you could almost have people all the way across the world, right? I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. And so the question is, well, how should the university of the future look? How should the workplace of the future look? Do we go back to do the exact same thing? And so my whole point is that because of this event, it's almost ushered in a new or amplified a previous research area. So people adapt and shift. And the same thing happens for technology. So over my career, I went from, interested in networking to quality of service in networking to wireless networking to wireless network security, and then ultimately to cybersecurity. And finally, now my focus is on cyber physical system security. So this sort of the integration of engineering and computing. And a lot of that just depended on my interests. It changed over time. Mm-hmm. Problems change over time. And also funding changes over time. So funding agencies, they decide, every year, what are the priorities? And you need to be aligned with those if you want to be funded.
I agree. So, just to drop a little plug for, you talked about expanding access. I think just to throw this idea out there, I think it would be good if, like, students of Caribbean heritage could also eventually, because I think the evidence is there that in terms of discipline and work ethic, students from the Caribbean do have a good representation in that area. So it'd be good if, like, schools such as Tech and others could eventually, hopefully in the next decade or two, start expanding access to those students as well. I think that would be a good, I think that'd be good, especially students of color from those areas. So
I love to go and visit those places to do some boots on the ground discovery, right? You know, who doesn't want to go to the Caribbean? So
So even helping strengthen the research capacity would be good
too. Yeah.
So how have you sought or found the right environment for you to thrive scientifically and intellectually?
Yeah, I kind of stumbled upon that. I think when I came out of undergrad, I only applied to one graduate program, which was Georgia Tech, and that was a mistake. I mean, fortunately, it worked out.
It worked out well, I would say.
Yeah, but you never know, right? So I always encourage folks to listen. We want Georgia Tech to be your number one choice. We think we are the best out there, and we're the best for you. So certainly apply to us, but who knows what may happen, and apply to other places as well. And so I always wanted to come back to Atlanta, and I knew Georgia Tech was a very good school, and that was kind of how I made my decision. I never thought that I would be working at Georgia Tech. And when I got to Tech, certainly it was not perfect, but I had overall a very good experience. I had a PhD advisor who is, he just turned 80, 80-year-old white male now, and he's, he was like a father to me, and mm-hmm. Just more supportive than I could have ever imagined. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of stumbled upon just really good people, good mentors, and good advisors that created an environment for me to thrive. And then once I saw that, hey, well, this is possible. And then I was much more intentional about, well, is this the place that I want to stay? Do they, are our values aligned? And that's really mm-hmm. important for me. I won't be at any organization where I don't feel that my values are aligned with that organization. It's just life is too short for that. And honestly, I feel that it does. I mean, we have really good leadership, very interested in essentially all the things that I'm interested in. So to me, it's a treat to be where I am. But again, I stumbled on it, and then I realized this is a really good place to be.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So I'm sure there are very sundry PhD students who eventually like to work at a place like Georgia Tech. But I'll leave that one right there. What have been your most effective and impactful ideas to date? What would you say have been the most impactful ideas you have implemented, whether it be in network security, whether it be in your various roles in administration? What would you say has been your most impactful idea?
Yeah, I would go with, let's go with one technical one and one mentoring. Yeah, we'll do that. So the technical one is I'm pretty much probably most known for work I've done in rogue access point detection. And so this is really early work, a couple of decades ago, literally, but it's
a couple of days.
Exactly. It's, you got these wireless access points, and believe it or not, they were not as pervasive as they are now, right? And so you got to be basically rich to get one of these, like companies would have to be really wealthy to have two of them. And you might have Wi-Fi in, 10% of the building, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it was when I was in graduate school early on. And so there was this risk that kind of popped up, this threat of, well, what if, an individual bought their own access point, wireless access point, and plugged into the network? What happens? And now you basically are expanding the company's private network into, let's say, the parking lot, where you can have an attacker just sitting in their car, just monitoring traffic, trying to reach these malicious, reach various machines that are via malicious ways. So all that stuff was folks were worried about, and there had been some attacks. And so we end up coming up with a really cool technique that before it was like, well, let's look, it's going to emit these wireless signals, these rogue devices. So let's kind of drive around, walk around and see if we can detect these wireless devices. But that's crazy for like a campus, like a Georgia Tech type campus, or even companies that have these large campuses. So the method that I and colleagues developed, it focused on, well, if we look at the backbone traffic, because that's ultimately what they're trying to do. If you connect a wireless access point to a network, they're ultimately trying to traverse that network. So what we can do is monitor the traffic at the backbone. And we had some clever algorithms to determine that traffic originated from a wireless device and not a wired device. And then once we're able to do that, we can determine if that wireless device was a rogue or not, because we had a list of all the ones that were legit and the one and able to determine that this was a rogue device. And so what's neat about it is now if you have a company that's massive, let's say like a Sandia, which is massive out of New Mexico, and this is again decades ago, we don't have to literally walk the halls. People would walk the halls with RF scanners looking for signals over, half a mile, kind of square foot or whatever, half a mile radius, I guess you could argue, for these massive campuses. You can just look at the network traffic and determine that. So that's what I became when I became a distinguished scientist, an ACM distinguished scientist. Mm-hmm. Citation is for the work in rogue access point detection. We had one of the earliest papers in that world. And then the other thing I would say that I'm most proud of is me and two of my colleagues, Sam Graham and Barr Cola. Sam is the mechanical engineering chair and Barr is a professor of mechanical. Mm-hmm. We came up with the ARL network, so the Academic Research and Leadership Network. Mm-hmm. And the whole goal of this network was to develop a community for STEM PhDs and near PhDs, basically like you, because we noticed that just didn't really exist. And we wanted to make sure we had various type of mentoring programs and all that in place. Well, we started about 7-8 years ago. Fast forward, we have about 400 members now. Mm-hmm. And it's a very active network. We've had about 5 or 6, we have these workshops that they're co-located with NSBE, and mm-hmm. we would pay to fly people up, maybe 30, 35 folks up to do like a 2-day intensive training on how to be successful in academia, how to do your dossier, how to interview, how to do all those other things. And mm-hmm. so we've been doing that for about 5 or 6 years. So this is a community that didn't exist, and we actually were able to build it from scratch. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Oh, that's good. So I'm going to be very upfront. One of my goals is actually work in academia. So cool. Professor. So is this available for outside students, or is this only a tech?
No, it's certainly all students. So it's PhDs, or so it's a research community. So it's PhDs or near PhDs. So it's just arlnetwork.org.
Okay.
You can sign up there.
Okay, cool. That's good. That's very good. Yeah. So yeah, I thought that's interesting. You said monitoring network traffic to determine, if I'm understanding what you said correctly, mm-hmm. monitoring network traffic to determine the origins of where the interference is coming from. Is that mm-hmm. what you're saying?
Well, to determine the origins of the traffic itself. And so can I look at the traffic and determine that it started on a wired network or a wireless network? It turns out you can, just because wireless networks are just a lot more stochastic, if you will. And they also have various protocols that actually leak over into the wired network. And if you can detect those protocols in the traffic, you can say, well, this had to have come from a wireless network.
Okay, so I have a question where that is concerned. You said wireless networks are somewhat stochastic. Mm-hmm. To what extent? Because I thought, is it because of what, artificial intelligence, or is it the capacity of it to self-generate or come up with new ways to formulate its structure?
No, I'm just talking about really its susceptibility to interference. You turn on a microwave and your SNR is going to, drop significantly, right? So it's... You basically have this shared medium versus a wired network where it's not shared. And mm-hmm. so when you plug into the wall, there's no contention. It's just your device that can communicate on the network and you're using a network switch. But if you're on a wireless network, there is going to be contention. You're going to be fighting with the other wireless devices that are there in your proximity. Mm-hmm. You're going to be fighting with microwaves and other RF interference. You're going to be fighting with lightning strikes. And all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. So all my point is, all that can affect the wireless network mm-hmm. versus the wired network, and that plus the type of medium access protocol that wireless networks use allows you to distinguish between the two.
That's good. So how do you maintain you have a lot of responsibilities and you have accomplished a lot of stuff. So how do you maintain balance, Dr. Bale? How are you maintaining balance?
Yeah, balance is hard. People talk about work-life balance, and I've heard other phrases of work-life integration. And You know, what I try to do is make sure that I prioritize what are important, and that's family. And you know, you have to be very intentional about it. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes, you know, I will have to work late. I had to work late tonight. I had to work late last night, and so I won't be able to spend as much time with my kids and family. Mm-hmm. But I just make sure that I prioritize things and know that it's gonna be give and take. And if I really, you know, can't spend time, you know, these 2 days during the week, then I got to make sure I get it in with family and kids on the weekend, and just know that it's that balance is kind of hard. Mm-hmm. But you just got to make sure you prioritize. And even if you start out doing it, then it will just continue throughout your career. And so even if it's things that are important, you have to be willing to miss those things. For your mental health and for your family's health.
Exactly.
I try to be very intentional about my meetings. Even now, do I go into work or do I work from home? And I'm intentional about those things to minimize the time that I'm away from my family. Or if I go in, this will be a good day for me to drop my son off so we can spend that time in the car. When I travel, I'm very intentional about the timing of things, right? So can I time it? If it's a DC trip, you know, can I actually time it such that I can drop my kid off at the airport? I mean, not at the airport, drop him off at school. I go to the airport and actually be home in time for dinner, right? And so it just requires you thinking about it and being much more intentional and strategic. And then you can do it, but it's not easy. I have a good partner. My wife is very supportive, but she's equally busy. Mm-hmm. But the word really is being intentional, and you mm-hmm. can pull it off.
Okay, that's good. That's something I'll note as well. And she'll get there. I have, as we conclude, because I know you have a lot of things to do. So as we conclude, how have you been so successful as a pioneer in your field? What do you think has complemented to your success? And what two pieces of advice would you give to those wanting to pursue the field that you're currently working in?
Yeah, so I've been fortunate. I think I have always been very, very hungry and just, you know, and resilient, I think, is a way to describe me. So I, you know, had many setbacks sort of in life in general, and I've used that experience to apply to my professional career. So I don't get as worked up as some folks do about certain challenges. I just find a way around it. And because I've been doing that my entire life. Oh, yeah. So being resilient, you know, working very hard, and also finding mentors, being very intentional about finding mentors and mentors that look like you, mentors that don't look like you. As mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier, my advisor is more of a sponsor and a champion than even a mentor. He's just he's a really good friend. And so you got to make sure you do that, and don't be afraid to ask questions. I ask questions all the time, including to the people that report to me. That's fine. I tell them mm-hmm. I don't care about being right. I just want to make the right decision. So, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, that's fine, but I want to make sure that we get it right. It doesn't have to come from me.
Preaching.
Yeah. So the advice I have is really essentially that is work hard and get mentors. Don't be afraid to ask for help, ask for advice. Mm-hmm. It does not show any sort of weakness. We mm-hmm. all struggle, even the most arrogant folks that don't want to show it. They all do. And it's much more important, I think, to get it right than to actually be right.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. That's something to note. So what has been the most beneficial advice you have received?
Oh, man. That'll be
the last question, right?
Yeah. You know, it's actually what I talked about earlier. I mean, I get lots of advice, and oftentimes I internalize it. And it's funny, my wife and I were debating this, right? So a lot of times I get, and as engineers and scientists, we're taught to not memorize, right? We're taught to understand like how it works. Yeah, and it's funny. So she's a lawyer by training, and a lot of what they do is lots of complicated things, but also memorizing cases and exactly where things were found in the case. And we're taught to do the exact opposite, right? So she would be able to pull up, here are the three most important pieces of advice for me, and they came from A, B, C, and D. For me, I usually take that advice and I internalize and I incorporate it, and then I'll forget like man, well, did I get this advice from someone? Because I've just started to do those things. Mm-hmm. But one I just that I often pull out, which obviously means that it was important and stuck with me, is the whole build your voice piece. Right. And this was from one of my wife's law partners many years ago, and we were talking about, I think, diversity and just how to change the various fields of engineering or law. And you know, he basically said, well, if you can't do anything, it's very difficult to make these changes kind of at the bottom. And what you got to do is build your voice and be exceptional. And then once you do that, then the changes that you attempt to make, they'll be so much more impactful. Mm-hmm. And so I love to sort of leave that with you and your audience. And it certainly has worked for me.
Yes. Thank you again, Dr. Bear. It was good to have you on.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. We're glad you were able to tune into this podcast. Once again, this is The New Chemist, where we discuss chemistry, which simply put is the science of change, as well as the other sciences, careers, community, research, and COVID-19. Thanks again for listening. Note, the views on this podcast represent those of my guests and I. Thank you.